Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everybody. 9:04 the time, our final hour today here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Monday, May 18th, 2026 edition. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Hamm with you, broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. They got the Memorial Day sale going on right now at Family Leisure. Check it out at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Currently 77. Already, though, it feels like 84. Temperature expected to reach 89, so that means that humidity will take the feel-like temperature into the lower 90s. So here we go, folks, ready or not. Thunderstorms, though, approaching in the area, and it looks like tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there's all the possibility, maybe not all-day things, all-day affairs, but the rain and the thunderstorms are in the forecast. 55% chance tomorrow, then 95% Wednesday, 88% right now on Thursday, 95% on Friday before the weekend. Looks to be pretty nice, and then more rain next week. So it is what it is. It's also Monday. That means it's time to talk with the Tigers head baseball coach, Matt Reiser.
It's time to talk University of Memphis baseball with Tigers head coach Matt Reiser. Brought to you by Landers Nissan and Landers Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in South Haven. If it doesn't say Landers, you paid too much. Here's Coach Reiser with Greg and Eli.
He is Matt Reiser, Tigers baseball coach, brought to you by Landers Nissan, Landers Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram. Next week's Memorial Day, so this is it for us, although, of course, Matt may be making some other appearances as the summer goes along, but baseball continues for the Memphis Tigers, as for the first time in 3 years, they have qualified for the American Conference Tournament. First of all, Coach, good to see you, and congratulations.
I appreciate it. As always, gentlemen, appreciate you having me on, and I'll see. It's not where you start, it's where you finish, right? And I thought the guys did a really good job rallying around there, each other, and stayed the course, and obviously put us in a good position here and got the 5 seed here in the American Conference Tournament.
You won against East Carolina. You won against UTSA. They're the top 2 seeds in the conference. You won the series against both those. You lost the series in Charlotte, but it's not because you played poorly. Give them credit. They scored 3 in the bottom of the ninth of game 3 to win that series. And, of course, as you would have it, you open up with Charlotte on Wednesday in Clearwater. And you are the 5 seed, as you mentioned. So 5, 6, 7, 8, those 2 games are playing for their lives that first day. You win, and then you move into the double elimination remainder of the tournament. If you lose, you come back to Memphis. So what was it like? What did you learn from the Charlotte series?
Yeah, I was just really happy that we took care of business there Friday night, or game one Thursday night, I guess. And, did a good job, really. Even the game 2 kind of got away from us a little bit there late. We had 1 big inning and lost 8-2. I think we got 6 runs in the bottom of the 7th. So, we learned a few things. Obviously, that we can continue to not play just great baseball, but if we play, again, to handle things and handle moments, 9 times out of 10, we're going to win the ball game. And even though we lost that game on Saturday, that was the 1 of the 10 that we lost when we were handling things, to be honest with you. So it was good. To be honest with you, if we're in a different position, we probably do things a little bit differently in that last game. It really had no implications on the seeding. We were going to be the 5 seed the way it worked out. Obviously, we were always playing to win the game. We run Carson Fair out there for 2 innings, right, and a little bit more extended. He hadn't thrown in a week. So traditionally, obviously, we wouldn't do that. We'd bring him into the 8th. And so it was just good to see our guys. I thought they did a really good job all weekend of responding. And Charlotte's physical. Charlotte's got their shortstop back, the guy who Woody believes is the reason why they've had the season they've had, right, because they lost him in the second weekend of conference play. Felt like he was the difference maker. Felt like if he would have been in the lineup all year long, they would probably have won the league or been at the top of the league. Yeah,
he's so, that good, huh?
Yeah, he's a good player. Yeah, his name will be called on the MLB draft day, and so he's a really nice player and got back last week, of course, just right in time for the Tigers to come in town to Charlotte. So that's the way it works, and in time for the tournament. But I thought overall we played pretty well, and really just again pleased with the way we've handled things here the back half of the way we finished it off. We didn't wait around until Saturday. We didn't scoreboard watch. We didn't do any of that stuff. We did a good job taking care of business, and now we're on to season 2 of the tournament.
You talked about it week 1 when you were here, that this was the goal, that getting to Clearwater and the conference tournament, that was a big goal of this year. So having done that, found a way there, your first conference tournament as the head coach here? Like, just how rewarding is it to see, like, hey, we went out, we set a goal, and we accomplished that goal?
Yeah, 100%. Well, and this was the first goal, right? Like, yeah. we've the first of many goals, and that's what we talked about there on Thursday night after we had clinched and got in the tournament. Okay, man, mission number one done, on to mission number two. How high can we get this thing going? We set a record for most American Conference wins ever in the history of the program. That was 13 wins. That ended up being the record for
Congratulations.
Most wins. Yep. Highest seed we've been in over 15 years. How many years? I think it was 2012 or 2013 was the last time that we had a team higher than fifth in the league. So, you know, obviously a lot of good accomplishments, but still a lot left on the plate to go eat, right? And so that's what we had talked about. All those goals and all those ambitions we talked about when things weren't going well, hey, man, they're still right in front of us. Same thing when they were going well here at the back half of the year. All those things are still on the table. Hey, now we're in the tournament time. And, you know, I did a little I stepped away from the drinks a little bit, if you know what I mean, the beverages of choice. Early in the season, you know, week one, we kind of got into it. And it's like, you know what, I'm not going to a dark place. And so, but I told our staff, I said, hey, every time we kind of make this next round, right, when we clinch, I'll have one. So I had one little tie. So hey, now we're in the single elimination. Hey, if we win on Wednesday, I'll have a little toddy on Wednesday night, right into the double elimination tournament. Each round we continue to grow, we'll go. So, but just, you know, again, for us, I think we're in a really good place. Now we've gotten to this tournament, right? This was the first time in a long time when I became the head coach here that you had to qualify for the tournament. You know, back in years past, they just took everybody in the conference and kind of seeded it out as you finished up the year. So you look at, you know, like Tulane the year before I got here, I had 14 wins on the season, just kind of assessed everything to get ready for the tournament and wins the tournament with 14 wins. It's not really the best representation of our conference. So we fought hard for this new bracket to kind of lay it out. It is a tremendous bracket to get through when you're coming from the single elimination. You know, we're going to have to win 5 games in 5 days. You can look at things and kind of go, man, that's a lot to do, man. We haven't played 5 games in a row and whatever, you know. Or go, hey, man, we got to just go win on Wednesday. That's simply mission number one, right? So go take care of business there. We haven't decided on a starter yet. We talked a little bit of that off of the air. Also, we've got, all hands on deck. And so we've got some practice this morning. We've got some guys throwing some live ABs because to win a tournament, it will take somebody who hasn't been there all year long to step up and have some big moments for us.
From what you just said, it seems like you like the fact that everybody doesn't get a trophy, that 8 out of 10 make it and 2 go home.
Yeah, 100%. Well, and then you're rewarded for your body of work, right? When you look
in
at
the bracket,
yeah, exactly right. So you look at UTSA and East Carolina. Hey, man, they finished 1-2, co-champs. Hey, man, they're not playing until Friday, so they're going to sit back and wait and see what happens. You know, they'll have some burns at the beach, hopefully, from Monday to Thursday, right? As we're playing through the tournament and getting ready. But I really enjoyed the way we've designed this because it kept guys playing all the way through to the very last pitch. Even ourselves, right, yesterday, trying to win that game against Charlotte, to take that series to go into the conference tournament with our closer in the game, right, and just didn't throw off.
Do you like the fact that you are playing the team that you just played? Because you obviously have just seen their pitchers, but that also means they've just seen your pitchers as well. Like, does it matter at all that you get Charlotte right after playing them?
I can tell you my eyeballs really appreciate that we're playing Charlotte again, because now I don't have to go back and watch a bunch of screen, a bunch of scout reports, all that kind of stuff, right? I mean, we just saw them. So the prep work is there. It's more like a 4-game set, right? So, I do, personally. I think it's good. I think the way it played out, and that's what I told the guys post-game, not to go too much into detail, but in the post-game deal, hey, man, I said, this is kind of fate, right? Like, let them enjoy their day. It was senior day, you know, heroic moment, whatever. I really thought Carson Fair pitched his way out of it, you know, catch one off the end of the bat to lose the game. Hey, man, struck out their best hitter, who was 4-for-4 on the day with the bases loaded, nobody out. And then gets their next best hitter out, the ground out on one pitch. And, hey, man, we've got everything formulated to win this thing. Hey, catch one and it happens. It's baseball, right? But now it keeps us hungry for that tournament, right? Now it's not like, hey, man, all right, we got the tournament. We got the clear water. Let's go enjoy a beach day. It's like, hey, man, those suckers walked us off.
We
got
to be ready to play once we don't
play.
100%. Hey, we owe them one a little bit. And you could see in their eyes, you could see in their heart, hey, man, these guys are prepared and ready to rock and roll for the tournament. So, you know, does that mean we win the tournament? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But what we will do, we'll go out and compete our butts off there on Wednesday and go from there.
If I'm not mistaken, Thursday, game one, I think Maccabee at a home run early, maybe Harrington at a home run against their guy.
Yep.
Do you expect that guy to be on the hill Wednesday?
Sure. Yeah, why not? I mean, I would hope that we see that guy or the other guys, I'll be honest with you, whoever they throw up there, fine. Like, and that's the thing. I think in years past, when you look at the league, there was kind of a guy that you really want to see. I really didn't want to see just Savage. If we made the tournament in East Carolina, we're the 8 seed, that's the last guy you want to see, right?
Right.
There's. Don't get me wrong. Collectively, as a whole, this league's really good. This is the best the league's been in 3 years, in my opinion, right? And I think we're a multiple bid league, maybe two or three bids. We'll see how it works out when it's all said and done. But there's not an arm that you just go, man, if we just don't do everything right and he don't screw up, man, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. There's some guys we're going to have to grind on, no doubt, right? There's some guys we're going to have to do a really good job game planning and have success. But, you know, you just don't feel like you're going to be overmatched like a U Savage that's in the tournament from this year's point of view. And again, that's Norby who's leading, top five in the country in strikeouts in one of the categories. So, again, for us, I think that's the good part about going this is we're looking at this and the top four teams, right, in the league that all have the buys, we were 8-4 again. Okay, so we had a lot of success, right? We had a lot of success with East Carolina, UTSA, swept Rice. You know, we lost 2 out of 3 to UAB, got walked off on. So when you look at this thing holistically, we feel really good about our opportunity and our chances here in the tournament.
Yeah, do you look at it pretty much as like it is wide open amongst all of these teams that are there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's an advantage to UTSA and East Carolina not playing until Friday, right?
Yeah.
From a starting pitching standpoint, they've got to win 3 to win it all. We've got to win 5 to win it all. So, like, you know, there's some of that. But, you know, I kind of compared it yesterday. I said, you know, we watched this college football playoff, right? And we watched these teams get byes in this college football playoff, and they're the one getting stomped after you can build the momentum in this. And so, hey, man, you win on Wednesday, you feel good about what you're doing. You win on Thursday, you really got that momentum going. Whoever's at the UTSA, there you'll get the bracket up. Hey, man, they've been sitting around for a little while, like I said, maybe with a few sunburns, and all of a sudden we come in with some momentum and we pop them too. So I really think this can work out and work to our advantage to where we can make a run in this tournament.
Where are the guys mentally?
I think they're in a great place. I think they're in a really good place. They're calm, they're cool, they're collected, they're laid back, but not too laid back, right? I think that's the part that we've continued to harp on this optimal speed limit, right, of 55. And so I think we've done a pretty good job of that. I think about Thursday when we came out, we hit the home runs, right, and we get the lead, and we can start feeling the juices flow a little bit. We're up 9-0 with a chance almost to run rule. Guy lays out, makes a play, to keep it from being a run rule game with the bases loaded and made it 11-0, right? And all of a sudden, we drop a ball up in the lights, and the guy falls here, and the guy falls there, and all of a sudden you look up, and we score 3 runs. There's no panic in the dugout. I mean, it's like, hey, man, no, all right, cool, whatever. Like, we'll play another 3 innings. Who cares? Like, they enjoy being around each other. They enjoy playing the game. And I think that's important when you go into tournament time.
So when you – the game even – after the first game you guys win on Thursday, were you automatically the 5 seed at that point? Could you have moved?
No, we could have moved. Yeah, there's some more movement we could have had. And now looking at it, now when you look back, because Rice ended up sweeping, we could actually swept the weekend and it still would have been the 5, right? Because of the tiebreaker with UAB, the way it all worked out. So, yes and no, right?
But At that time, you didn't know.
And also, we're still fighting. That's the beauty of this tournament is we're still fighting for the bye, right, for the 3 or 4 seed, because we knew we had the tiebreaker with Rice, but we need Tulane to take one or two. We just knew we had a better weekend than Rice, right, and it was all said and done. So it kept us motivated, obviously, to keep going and keep rocking and rolling. And, even to the last game, game 3, I mean, hey, man, 14 wins is a big deal for our program. We that's the most wins we've had in conference play since the days of Mark Little and him in 94, I think.
Jeez. Really?
Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of implications that was going into the weekend. So that's why you saw the fight. I think the guys were still hungry to say, hey, yeah, we've qualified for a tournament. But, Coach, that was mission number one, right?
Yeah,
you said
this
from the get-go. That was only mission number one. We still got other things to accomplish, and we still want to leave our mark and our legacy here. And so I think that was really good to see, to tell you the state of the mind of the program where we're at.
Tigers Baseball Report with Coach Matt Reiser, brought to you by our friends at Landers Nissan in South Haven and Landers Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, also in South Haven. Again, thank you to Jeff Field, the former Memphis Tiger, for his support once again every single year. He is always there for us and for this University of Memphis Tigers baseball team. All right, since this is going to be our last week with you, hopefully you move on, you win this conference tournament, you go on and have an NCAA appearance, and we'll talk to you, of course, down the road. But I'm just curious. You also got to start thinking about next year, start thinking about recruiting, all that stuff. You guys, I thought, did an incredible job in identifying players in the portal and getting those players, because when you look up and down the lineup, almost all those guys are contributing, some more than others. But, I mean, it's like Freddy Rodriguez, Javon Hernandez, like right Gupton. So kudos to you guys for being able to do that. But the most important thing is, well, first is identifying, but to be able to have the resources to be able to get those players.
Yep.
Where do things stand? How do you feel about the future moving on and about the support you're getting with Memphis Tigers baseball from the people in power?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an ever-revolving door, right? I mean, you're looking at universities across the country. I read a stat yesterday talking about Duke, you know, how much money they're – how many jobs they're cutting to save money. And you look at UNC Charlotte and what they're doing to cut money and cut programs and different stuff. There's people all across the country trying to find money to pay the players, and they ain't paying paying the baseball players, okay? So let's be honest with that, what it is. The reality of it is, you know, the basketball and the footballs of the world, there's a lot of money being thrown around right now. And so that keeps you keeps the revolving door kind of there, if that makes sense to you a little bit. That we got to continue to evaluate where we are, right, as a program and the resources that we have, and what might have been good 6 months ago might not be good, you know, now, right? And how do we continue to try to stay in front of what is to come, right? We've got this new 5 for 5. It looks like it's going to come down and go down from the NCAA standpoint, where basically you get 5 years and 5 seasons. And there is no waiver. There is no COVID. There is no, hey, man, this is a 6-year, you went to D2 type of deal. Hey, man, you get 5 to play 5. Okay, what would that look like us to navigate moving forward? So I think there's a number of things that will continue to evolve as we go over the next couple years. So for us, when we talk about that and the investment administration is, hey, let's just kind of just do an assessment, right, and look at where we are right now currently and how we get in front of the curve that's getting ready to happen. And so I think we have to be creative in that, and I think that's the neat part about our administration. Cooper was on the trip with us, our sport admin.
Cooper Jones
this past week. Saw Charlotte, saw what it looked like facility-wise. Like, man, this place is gorgeous. I said, yeah, it's really nice, right? Like, we have a good facility, but when you compare it to other people in the conference of what that looks like. Hey, but maybe Charlotte didn't have as much, you know, NIL money as we do. I don't know. I don't know where they stand. So, again, I think that's the territory that we're in. We're in kind of uncharted waters of, like, how deep is the deep end, right? What does that really look like? I can see it's just darkness down there.
But it is, right? The abyss.
I don't know what the abyss looks like. So, you know, again, for us, we can concern ourselves and worry with that, or just doing a simple assessment. Hey, where are we? Are we getting the right people in the program? Do we have the right players in the program? Do we have the right administration set in? Do we have the right staff in place, right? I think those are the important pieces, more importantly than overall just dollars. Hey, man, how many dollars do you have? That's not the important piece. You know, there's plenty of people in our league that had some money, didn't do very well this year, okay? Are you getting the right people in place? And to answer your question, Greg, along the way, I feel like we have an administration, the right people in place to help us continue to move forward.
One of the changes has been, of course, with the roster limits and the difference in scholarships and all that stuff. What impact here early on are you seeing from that in baseball, or do we really even know for sure yet exactly how that will play out?
I think we're going to see that impact here in the next 2 years, right? Because we're at the 34-man roster, right? I say with air quotes here, as you can't see that on the radio, but with the air quotes of the DSAs are still in place, right, which is designated student athletes. So guys can still extend their roster. Mm-hmm. And now I'll be honest with you, there's a pandemic, epidemic, whatever you want to call it, whatever word you want to use, of injuries that are going through college baseball, right? I just told you about Woody and how bad he felt about losing his shortstop. That was one player, right? I mean, there's teams that are having, like East Carolina, let's not even get to there, what they've lost, right? They've lost 3 pitchers on the mound. They've lost 2 position players or 3 position players. They've lost 6 or 7 different guys that are really impactful guys, still winning the league, right? And then I get it, it's East Carolina, but still to be able to do that. So for us, I think the real impact's coming here in the next couple years from the roster limitation standpoint, because now if you start having 7 or 8 injuries, you're looking up just trying to fulfill a team.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden people go, man, how'd that happen so overnight? Like, because all you see is a logo and a score. You don't know who's actually in the box score. You don't get the injury report up to date. You're not reading all those things and how impactful those things can be on a program and how impactful one person can be on the program. I get it. So you go take these money and this resource and you invest in this one guy to be your Friday night guy. God forbid something happened. All of a sudden you look up going, well, I just spent 3 spots on one because we knew the guy, but we couldn't foresee the future.
It's all gamble.
It is. It's a lot of gambling. So that's why I think it's, again, so important that collectively you're getting the right people in place in the program, whether it's, again, your coaches, your players, your administration, that understand that holistically and can be a little bit more subjective to it than they need to be.
All right, your pitcher and hitter of the week.
Yeah, hitter of the week, man, I thought was James Smith. I thought he had a really, really good week for us. And I can think of a few big swings from obviously Brady McAbee and Trey Cassidy. I thought that duo was really good for us, man, this week. You know, we had some guys. We had Freddy Rodriguez. He broke the stolen base record.
Yes, he did.
He's officially the Freddy the Jet Rodriguez, right? He got the stolen base record there at Middle Tennessee this past week. So, congratulations to him. KK Chalmers is actually going to come in town and present him with the bag.
Very nice.
Yeah, so we got that at 1 o'clock. So, that's going to be pretty cool, man, to see KK, you know, obviously pass the baton down to Freddy. But, yeah, James Smith will be the hit of the week. Pitcher of the week, you know, there's a number of guys, obviously, threw well. I thought David Case threw really, really well there in game two. I thought Logan Rushen was fantastic there on Sunday for us. He came in and threw four innings for us as well. But when it's all said and done, the guy that helped us clinch it, who had struggled the last couple of weeks, it was great to see him back to his normal self. Will Howell will be my pitcher of the week.
Very nice. Well, Coach, it's been great. It always is. It was great last year. It's been super this year. And, you know, this year, at least we're talking about a tournament that you're going to be playing in. So we want to wish you nothing but the best. You know, you always have a spot here with our show on this station. So we look forward to talking to you here in the future. But go get them down in Clearwater.
Awesome. Greg, Eli, appreciate all of it, man. Jeff, if you listen, man, we really appreciate you and this opportunity to do this and continue to spread the word of the good Memphis baseball and the University of Memphis.
Well said. That's Matt Reiser, Tigers baseball coach. Again, brought to you by Landers Nissan. Landers, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram.
Folks, Fleet Feet, that's the place to go to get all your running gear. You want to make sure you get shoes that are just right for you. Go see them at either one of their two locations in East Memphis. They're in the Laurelwood Shopping Center out in Collierville. They're at Poplar, Houston, Levy, next door to the Hueys there, that shopping center. You go in, they take a look at the way you run, the way you walk, and they'll get you fitted with shoes that are just right for you, plus all your other gear, everything else you need. You can also get involved in their group runs and things they do. Of course, they sponsor a lot of races around town as well. You can get involved with all of it. It's all about the runners, all about the running community at Fleet Feet.
You're listening to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 Mornings.
Morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:29 is the time. I don't understand all this uproar about the Tennessee Titans and their hiring of Ramon Foster for their analyst job on their radio broadcasts. I don't know if you guys have followed this over the weekend, but Dave McGinnis, who passed away, was the analyst. Taylor Zarzer? Is that how you pronounce his name? Play-by-play guy?
Yeah, play-by-play guy, yep.
So they hire Foster. Foster, long-time offensive lineman for the Steelers. Very, very good player. But he went to the University of Tennessee. He's doing radio in Nashville. I believe he may have been their sideline reporter at one time. And he's from Ripley, Tennessee. But he did not play for the Titans. So people are losing their minds because there were a lot of players who wanted the job, from Keith Bullock to Sanders, the wide receiver. Trying to think who else was they brought up other. Oh, they brought up Jason McCourty. They brought up Brad Hopkins. They brought up Taylor Lewan, who, of course, is on with Bussing with the Boys. He's pretty national now, so I don't know if he would have the time to do that. But the point was that people were like, no, you have to be a former Titan. And I know in the past they had Frank Wycheck, who passed, and McGinnis was an assistant at one point with the Titans, but was the Arizona Cardinals head coach. I don't get it. I mean, if the guy is that good, that's why they hired him. I don't think they hired him because he was bad. I guess the assumption is that Foster is going to be really good at what he does.
I did not. I've not seen anything about it, know anything about it. But, I mean, I don't think you have to necessarily have played for that team to be able to be the analyst for that team.
Yeah, Titans reporter Paul Kaharsky, who I think has been on with us before, he kind of went viral. He said the Titans just greeted all of their big-time alumni with a big slap across the face. Really? Okay. That's one man's opinion, but to me, it's no. You give the person who you feel is best for the job, and he still has connections to the team, the organization, obviously the state, the University of Tennessee, Ripley. I mean, the whole thing. It's not like they just pluck some dude from, like, Spain or something to come on the broadcast. By the way, tomorrow, the vote is expected for the 2030 Super Bowl, I believe, which Nashville is expected to be awarded the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the guy's been, if you're hiring somebody who has been covering the Titans for years, I don't think that it matters whether he played for the team or not.
I agree.
I don't know why that would really matter one way or another. I mean, I could see, like, some people that don't get the job if you are a former Titan, like, and you wanted the job and you don't get it, or you might be mad just because you didn't get the job. But I don't see where everybody has to try and act like the Titans have done something wrong.
Exactly. Pete Thamel reporting that at the Big Ten meetings, the league is amplifying its off-season voice and is unified on pushing for a 24-team college football playoff. I assume that's, again, from the coaches and from the ADs. But once again, as we talked about last week, you have the ACC united, you have the Big Ten united, you have the Big 12 united, you even have the SEC united with the exception of their commissioner, Greg Sankey. But what you don't have is ESPN wanting to expand the playoff beyond 16, because now you would have to involve Fox, and they are rivals, and you don't want Fox getting a piece of the big pie. You want that pie all to yourself. But the Big Ten, again, the meeting's going on, the push is for 24 teams. I think a lot of people on the outside of the college football family that are not coaches or even players or ADs don't like 24. A lot of the media have come out and have voiced their opinion. They don't like 24. I don't know. I think there's another impasse approaching when it comes to that, because there already was. That's why we have a 12-teamer again this year. And there's nothing wrong with a 12-teamer. But the Sankey wall with the support of ESPN is going to be a tough one to break down.
Well, that's the SEC and ESPN are very, very powerful. So is the Big Ten. And I would have... It feels like at some point it will get to 24. It's just what has to be given in order for that to happen, for Greg Sankey and the SEC to come aboard with that 24 team. And I'm sure there's something out there they may want or whatever that they could eventually get. But it's hard to think that would be, if with all of the other conferences on board with the 24, I know SEC has power. I know ESPN has a lot of power. But if everybody else is wanting one thing, I feel like it's at some point we're going to get there.
I would think so. As much power as the one guy has, I would still think that all the other people wanting it one way would prevail. But who knows? On3 Sports has put together their top 10 list of the top 10 returning players in college football in 2026. Do you have a guess as to who number one is? And it's not Arch Manning?
Dante Moore?
Dante Moore is number 8. You got a guess, J-Ham?
Jeremiah Smith.
You are correct. Jeremiah Smith, who some thought he was the best player last year.
Where would Malachi Toney fit on there?
Malachi Toney, number 3.
Okay.
Yeah, another great, great player.
Cam Coleman?
Cam Coleman is number 10. Now with Texas. So you have three receivers. Let me double check. You have three receivers. Jeremiah Smith, 1. Malachi Toney, 3. And Cam Coleman, 10. And they are showstoppers. Absolutely showstoppers. You have one running back, Ahmad Hardy from Missouri, who just got shot. And he's on the rehab. He's hopefully... I haven't heard word one about whether or not he's going to be ready for camp and be able to play. I haven't heard, because Eli Drinkwitz has not said that, but he said that he's back in Columbia and rehabbing, I guess at a local hospital, but also I guess, using the Missouri facilities. I don't know all the details, but Hardy's the only running back on this top 10 list. Two quarterbacks. Arch Manning is 7 from Texas. So Texas has two of the top. Texas actually has 3 of the top 10. I'll get to the other guy in a second. And then Dante Moore. The other guy is Colin Simmons, the edge rusher from Texas. Yeah, there's still some edge rushers around in college football after it seemed like every one of them was drafted last month. So number one, Jeremiah Smith. Number two is Leonard Moore, the cornerback from Notre Dame. Tony Simmons, number 5, another edge. Dylan Stewart from South Carolina. Then Carter Smith, offensive tackle from Indiana. Then you got Arch Manning, Dante Moore, Ahmad Hardy, and Cam Coleman. There's your top 10. This is on 3 Sports. Returning players in college football this year.
Jeremiah Smith is...
he's incredible.
The dude's... it'll be, you know, interesting to see if he ends up being, like, how the draft plays out next year, because you've got a guy like that who is, like, everybody believes is an elite talent at wide receiver, but you do have some quarterbacks who are looked at rally, but then you also got a couple of those edge rushers who are absolute monsters. You've got a cornerback who's awesome. And these are all positions that people, the NFL now looks at as very important positions. And so you've got a little bit, you've kind of got one or two of those at every position that they could be looking at next year at the top of the draft, which could cause it to be a very interesting thing, depending on what the order is at the top of that draft.
And then has nothing to do with the draft next year. Well, it could be if somehow he is ruled eligible to play this year, but most people believe that Brendan Sorsby will be ruled ineligible, and therefore he would be available this summer in the supplementary draft. And if you miss this over the weekend, the representatives for Sorsby have asked the NCAA to expedite their decision, because the supplemental draft would be, what, mid-July? Somewhere in July, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's like a set time for it. But, yeah, I mean, it's got to be obviously before, at some point in there, before teams are starting to go to camp and everything else, I would assume.
A couple of other notes before we take our next break. The inaugural Memphis Football Club game or match took place over the weekend down in Louisiana, the L.A. Crew. And Memphis FC loses their first ever match, 1-0. For those who don't know about this soccer program, we had Kerry Talley on to talk about it several weeks ago. This is not a professional league. This is an amateur league, but really top-tier local and regional amateurs that play. And it looks like they're doing a really nice job in marketing this team. There's a lot of things going on, giveaways and all that. You can go to their website, but they'll be playing their first home match coming up here, I guess in the next few days, where they'll play the LA Crew again. And then I saw this earlier today. Our buddy Jason Munns from the Commercial Appeal, who did his little grab bag type thing where people ask him questions. He puts it together and posts the question and then his answer. And people were talking about Maxime Logie, who Memphis acquired at the end of last week, the kid from Florida Atlantic, who had committed to North Carolina, but then there was a transcript snafu, ends up still available, and Memphis grabs him. Didn't have big numbers at Florida Atlantic, but seemed like when he played, he produced. When he got his minutes, he produced. He only played 11 minutes per game. I don't know what the reason was that he wasn't playing more. From the video I've seen, looks very athletic. But the question somebody asked was, on a scale of Aaron Bradshaw to Dane Danger, where does Maxime Logie rank as a big man? And that puts kind of Jason on a spot, you know, in a tough spot, because it's two choices. But he said he's more of a Dane Danger guy, more of a guy who's more athletic, can run the court, get out there on fast breaks and finish, where we didn't see that from Bradshaw. Bradshaw was a guy who would step out and try to shoot threes, not real successfully, and that would be inside the paint for the most part. But if he was anything near Dane Danger, well, then the Memphis Tigers got a fine in Maxime Logie. Right now, the only question is whether or not they will get the signature from Fred Smith, That continues to be a wait and see. Fred Smith's commitment, but again, according to a number of different stories out there, he has not signed yet. And time, certainly, I'm sure he's on the clock as far as that's concerned. And Munns in his story reported, this is the first time I've seen this out publicly, which is something I already knew. That is, it is a guess, nobody would be surprised with this, a money issue. What's interesting is you work out a deal with a player in this day and age of NIL and agree to the financial commitment to that player. And then that player holds out later and wants more money. Again, I don't understand that once you've negotiated and the player commits, why can't they get that signature at that point? So portal's already open. Is there a problem with the calendar that I'm missing here? I don't get it. You leave them too much wiggle room if you don't sign them right away.
I mean, they might be saying, like, their agent may very well, we still want to know what else is out there.
Again, but then that's not a solid commitment to me. It's a, hey, I'm committing, but I'm going to continue to look.
That's why, I mean, commitments, just a commitment is never truly solid. That's, you wait till they sign.
Yeah, so that's a wait and see right now with Fred Smith. And then again, whether or not, now if Penny loses Fred Smith, then he would have two scholarships available, and I'm sure he'd go try to fill one of them. The other one, he continues to keep in his back pocket for an emergency, unless another big walks through the door. But I think they're happy with Logie, although he's 6'9", and again, they have the kid from North Alabama who's 6'9", but very good rebounder. So they got a rebounder, more of a guy who can run the court, and then Logie, they feel a little bit better about their bigs. But as far as playing a team that has those big mountains, like we saw in the NCAA tournament with the Michigans of the world, Purdue's are always like that, you know, Memphis is going to run into a problem when they play those teams. And they're going to play some of those teams early on the non-conference portion of their schedule with that schedule they have put together. All right, we'll take a timeout. Before we do so, I want to tell you about Corky's. Corky's Ribs and Barbecue for lunch or for dinner. It's always a good time to grab some delicious slow-smoked barbecue from Corky's. And Corky's will deliver anywhere in the country you want to ship. They will ship those ribs for you, that delicious barbecue. They have all types of goodies, including an award-winning catfish plate, tamales, great salads as well. But they're experts in barbecue, and they've been cooking it up for 40-plus years. If you got an event coming up, you want it catered, let Corky's cater it for you, starting you out as low as $7.99 per person. Now, I mentioned lunch or dinner. If you want them to deliver your Corky's barbecue, they'll do that. Set price, local delivery, $3.99. You can't beat it. Four locations if you want to head out there for lunch or dinner. Poplar Avenue in Memphis, that's in East Memphis. Poplar Avenue in Collierville. Germantown Parkway in Cordova, and Goodman Road in Olive Branch. Corky's Ribs and Barbecue, open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week. We'll get back to the NBA, which we started our show with early today at 7 o'clock. We'll get back to it for our final segment when we return. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 98.5 FM.
Did you miss your favorite Sports 56 show?
No!
Check out the podcast, broken down hourly, at sports56whbq.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. Never miss any Sports 56 show again with our podcasts available daily from Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
So yesterday, as we've talked about, and you guys know by now, Cleveland destroyed Detroit in Detroit for Game 7 of their playoff series. They won by 31, and now the Cavaliers move on to play the Knicks. It's just astonishing to me that a team that won Game 6 in Cleveland can come back in Game 7 and play as poorly as they did. But they did. They shot 35%. After the game, J.B. Bickerstaff, who I love, former Grizzlies head coach, said, sure, it's disappointing, but the season is not a disappointment. Yeah, the game and the performance, but the season is not a disappointment. Even though they were the number one seed as congested as it was, I agree. Where they were a couple of years ago, right, J.M.?
Right. They were a 14-win team a few years ago. They tripled that. Then they go from 14 to 44 to 60. It's a hell of a jump.
Yes.
And they did it, like I mentioned, with Tobias Harris as your starting power forward, playing next to an all-star in Jalen Duren. Cade broke out. They did that with – they basically overachieved, you know, just from what we saw personnel-wise, what they lacked and what they going into the playoffs. I can't say it's a bad season. They had a great run. It ended disappointing,
right.
Yes, but
overall,
they have
from
stuff to build on
yeah.
from that.
What do you think, Eli?
I don't think it's disappointing at all. I don't think it's a –
right.
I mean, they're – again, you in the NBA, like, you got it takes some playoff years to figure out playoff basketball like that. You got to go through it. That's, you know, the fact that they were able to come back and beat Orlando. Now, if they had gotten knocked off by Orlando and you don't get, but getting another round, going seven games in a second round, like, it's just building up that scar tissue or whatever you want to call it. Like, you got to get playoff experience. And to get that, yeah, I didn't have high expectations for them really coming into the postseason. I didn't expect them in any way to win the East, even with home court advantage. So, no, I think it was a fantastic year. And again, it's a big learning experience. And not only for the players to go through it, but also the front office to see, like, we need more. Like, we need Cade. We got to get Cade some help because this isn't enough right now to compete at the level to try and win championships.
Taking everything into account, injuries, expectations, performance, all of it, and minus the crap teams at the bottom, okay? Who really was disappointing this year? Like, disappointing. I mean, Philadelphia beat Boston in a best-of-seven. Boston overachieved, let's be honest. You could be disappointed they didn't get farther once Tatum came back, but they're not disappointed. I can think of one right off the top of my head, and you tell me if you agree or disagree. I think Denver was a disappointment. I think Denver should have been a little better, should have had a better run. I thought they should have beaten Minnesota. I mean, they went out and they got Cam Johnson. They had Murray and Jokic in the playoff run, and they lost in six games. But I think Denver would fall into that category. Who do you guys look at and go, this, like, if the Knicks lose the series to Cleveland, do you look at the Knicks as a disappointment?
Yeah, I would, because I picked them to go to the finals.
See, I think
at this point, as I said, once Boston went out, the Knicks have to win the East now.
See, I think that's the one. Yeah, that's the one I'd put as a disappointment if they don't win the East. Winning it all, though, wouldn't be a disappointment. Losing to Oklahoma City or maybe even San Antonio. But Denver's one I go, that's a disappointment. Is there any that jump out to you?
Houston, to me, is the disappointment.
But injuries. But they had some key injuries.
I would go with Houston. Not just, you know, the injury there, but they still
made the move for Durant.
And that's the one I was looking at, too. But then I looked, you lost your point guard right off the bat.
I guess I didn't like their mentality and attitude that they showed throughout after losing their point guard throughout.
Okay, know? That's so, fair. That's fair. I can put Houston there.
With Denver, I looked at it more as we go back to the salary cap here.
Yeah, they're hamstrung what they can do.
Yeah, but that team right there had enough, didn't they?
But they end up, I mean, they end up third in the West behind Oklahoma City and San Antonio, who are just the two best teams in the league.
But losing to Minnesota, I just thought their performance in the playoff series against Minnesota was disappointing. But
yeah, they got to outperform that.
That's where I would put them.
The thing we had talked about as a possibility is happening. The New Orleans Pelicans are hiring Jamal Mosley. So, talked about the fact that at the end there was a lot of reporting that for whatever reason the New Orleans people, relationship-wise, like Jamal Mosley, if he did end up out at Orlando, and it does happen where Shams is reporting that he will be the new head coach of the Pelicans.
It's amazing how that stuff gets out so early and ends up being true. Like, a lot of that ends up being, especially with the NBA, that information gets out and it's true. Not the information today that Shams reporting, but the information months ago. I remember you saying that on the program, Eli, about that you had heard Mosley is the guy New Orleans wants. It was like 3 months ago. So somebody had said right away that's the guy we want.
I don't know who it is, like, but I think there's a past relationship with somebody from the front office. They're like, they just have, there's a past relationship, and so.
Yeah, but were they putting two and two together, or were they told, no, this is the guy we're going after? And why would you say that? Why would you tell anybody?
I heard about it as a rumor the same around the same time Eli did, and it's kind of like it was almost expected by some, not connected to the organization, but I guess affiliated with them.
And it felt like maybe with the way they lost that maybe that would turn the Pelicans off, because it's a little harder sell after they had the lead and blew it, but they didn't care.
Okay, so who has openings right now? Orlando still has an opening, right? And we're thinking maybe Billy Donovan? Maybe. But it's taking a while right now. Portland has an opening, right?
Portland has an opening. It might be open for a while.
Sacramento's staying with Christie, right? Chicago has an opening.
Chicago has an opening.
And is that it?
I think that's it.
Okay, so three more openings. Tonight?
And some of these are waiting. I'm sure there's some that have been waiting for assistance that are with some of these teams, stuff like that, to interview and, you know, of the teams that are still playing, all that type of stuff. So we'll see how quickly those things get filled. But yeah, I don't – and I – because the Portland, they said, was – I know Stotts is one of their guys that they're looking at.
He was just
– and who the heck was there? Was somebody else?
Stotts was just let go, right? Stotts and Jerry Stackhouse were let go by who?
By Golden State.
By Golden State. So he's available right now.
Who was the other? There were two other. Somebody reported something about Portland. I know Stotts, and I think there were two other guys listed, but I don't remember who the other two guys were listed.
Probably Adelman's kid.
Again, because they're not paying anything, so they're hiring assistants or guys out of work, as the Portland's new owner doesn't want to pay anything.
Owner's just, like, we're carpooling the games.
You've got to get whatever you can get at a very low price for an NBA head coach.
Spurs Thunder tonight, Oklahoma City, 6.5-point favorite in game number one. And then tomorrow night, the Cavs and the Knicks get going from the world's most famous arena where all the stars will be. The Knicks, a 7.5-point favorite over Cleveland in game number one of that series, again, which begins tomorrow. Once again, tomorrow, we will have an abbreviated show from 7 until 9. And then we'll hand things off to the Ole Miss Radio Network and play-by-play announcer, our friend David Kellum, as the Rebels will begin the SEC baseball tournament. A 9:30 start, but a 9 o'clock pregame right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Our thanks to Matt Reiser for joining us on the program today. Connor O'Gara joins us tomorrow. Mickey Barker also will move his segment up to 8:05. And, of course, we got Humdinger's Trivia as well. We got some other fun things planned for you this week. Should be a lot of fun here on the program. Wovo and Friends on Sports 56 is coming up next. For Eli Savoy, for Jay Ham, I'm Greg Gaston. Have a great Monday, everybody.